Hi, I'm Liam O'Rourke, and this week's Raw did the lowest rating since February 17th, 1997, a show that saw Sid win the WWF title, a big guy that doesn't connect despite better options around him. As I said last week, good to see how much things have changed in 18 years.
I'm G. John Chase, and yes, I know we're all pissed off at Survivor Series and the fact that Sheamus is champion. It wasn't the most upsetting thing that happened to me this weekend. It was Clara Oswald dying in Doctor Who. I mean, what the hell am I supposed to do? I knew it was coming, but how am I supposed to get my Jenna Coleman fixed now?
I'm Kieran O'Rourke. And today is my birthday, and I can't help but notice that none of you wished me many happy returns on Twitter, which is cool because I didn't advertise it. But just remember this time next year,
a month before Christ, there was Kieran.
And I'm Carl Jones. And forget about who's better as a heel or babyface. What I want to know is from my 7 Twitter followers who follow me at oldmanjones85 whether or not I'm better sober or drunk doing the podcast. For the purposes of this week, folks, sober.
This is the panel for the 63rd Squared Circle Gazette Radio, and you can hear us debate which wrestlers were better as babyfaces or heels next. Hello everyone, and welcome to the 63rd Squared Circle Gazette Radio. I am Liam O'Rourke, alongside Carl Jones.
Again. Sober this week, folks.
G. John Chase.
I'm going to get drunk on cake.
And birthday boy himself here on November 25th, Kieran O'Rourke.
Hallelujah.
Very glad that you joined us this week, as well as everybody around the table and everybody listening for the second of our shows, looking at a number of different talents in the history of the wrestling business and debating whether or not they were better as faces or heels throughout the course of their career. We have done one of these shows before, so you can go back and listen in the archives at squaredcirclegazette.com to the previous version of this show. We had 8 fantastic talents that we reviewed previously. We're doing 6 this week. Of course, we have your feedback as well, breaking down whether or not these guys are better as antagonists or protagonists throughout the course of their career. So this is going to be a fun one. I just want to give a quick shout out to Tim R and Arrogantly Grateful of WrestlingForum.com, who originally pitched this idea way back when we did the first show. 6 fantastic guys to talk about. We're going to get straight to it now with the first person on the list, Jerry the King Lawler, one of my personal favourites. I'm keen to see what people think around the table about Jerry Lawler, because the bulk of his career was stuff that we didn't live through, didn't see at the time. Obviously, we're talking about Memphis, where he was the king, he was the man. Where you kind of weigh on this discussion when it comes to Jerry the King Lawler is how much of that you've seen and how much that impacts you personally, because as a heel, which is what most of us around the table saw on a national basis, Lawler's awesome. And you know, just speaking for myself, coming into being a wrestling fan in the early 90s and seeing Lawler was the first impression Jerry Lawler made on me. So I'm kind of curious to see what other people think around the table when it comes to that balance of Jerry Lawler, heel on a national level, to going back retrospectively and watching Jerry Lawler in his prime in Memphis. And of course he had runs as a heel in Memphis as well, but predominantly a babyface.
For me, this was probably the toughest of this week's ones.
Yeah, I think so too.
Because, as you say, as just this wacky over the top heel, he's kind of unparalleled. He's absolutely phenomenal. But after talked about one of the favourite feuds shows before, one of my favourite feuds was the Kaufman feud.
Oh yeah,
and that really opened up my eyes at what an incredible regional babyface Jerry was. He was just absolutely phenomenal. So it's a tough split, and I guess, and if you're looking at from a national perspective or the regional perspective, I guess if we're looking, well, I guess it's your own criteria, but say we're booking a nationwide promotion, say, I'd probably lean towards the heel role, just because he's so wacky fun, adds so much colour to card and your show, but goddamn, he's such an amazingly passionate, authentic, man of the people, hero babyface in Memphis. It really opened my eyes to me when I was watching that stuff back, and it's just yeah, I mean, you probably couldn't go wrong either way. He is the king for a reason. Don't forget the stuff he does these days. He actually probably did die with those Dolph elbows those years back. he was phenomenal as a straight-laced babyface, or yeah, this incredibly wacky, colourful heel. So personal love and experience, I'll go the heel route. But yeah, this for me is the toughest one this week.
You could say he was so popular, it's remarkable he wasn't mayor of Memphis.
Almost.
Third. Close only counts with horseshoes and hand grenades. It is a bit of a tough one. I loved, in particular, when you talk about his babyface runs. For me, it wasn't so much the Kaufman one as the feud with Funk. And, you know, and you sort of, your mind always goes back to really the empty arena match with Funk, and you've got Terry there in the ring, my eye, and all that sort of thing. Sort of the most vivid memory of it, but I think I'd probably be inclined to go with yourself there on this one, Kieran, in that I think I'd have to lean towards Jerry Lawler as a heel. And I think largely because, and it's something you referenced there, Liam, as well, that it's the first memory of him. Been back and watched Memphis stuff since, but didn't really live through it, didn't really experience it in that way. I think because of that, I would have to lean towards my introduction to him, which was his initial 93 run with Brett, which I tend to think is a bit of a forgotten gem, really.
You mentioned Terry Funk, as also quite a bit of Randy Savage as well, which obviously is going to get my attention every time. And obviously the fact you can't deny how successful he was as a babyface, of the fact that he still is the King of Memphis now. Whilst the King is a great babyface, he's an exceptional heel. It's exquisite. It's the Bret Hart feud that always sticks out to me, as previously mentioned. You know, you think of like the Kiss My Foot match, and like all that.
I tried to forget that bit. Yeah, truth.
But I enjoyed it because just like the promos leading up to it, what like Lawler's doing to make his feet stink,
step
like
he's in the horse shit.
Yeah, stepping the horse shit, and then just the whole, this is the finish of just like
touching Aldo Montoya's face.
Yeah, yeah, that's great. In the replay,
you want to put some stank on that toe.
And then just, you know, and then just like, you know, Brett beating him in the match, putting his foot in Lawler's mouth, and then that's not enough, so he pretzels him up and put his own foot in his own mouth. Vince McMahon built the school of ham acting, you know. Then, you know, Jerry the King Lawler is the headmaster. Okay, he's the guy in charge of it all, and it's because at the end of the day, and whilst I can see he's a good babyface, but like, in me, in the back of my mind, is thinking, right, there is no way that's not a face you want to slap. That's the thing. That's why he's a great heel. As a baby face, you can probably see, like, I guess he's a nice enough guy. But when he's just talking, and when he's like, you know, he's emoting through his face to the camera, he just looks like an asshole. The one thing I'll always remember, though, which is why I'm going to go heel on this one, SummerSlam 93, that entire performance, from the moment he comes out on the crutches, to when he reveals that he's faking it all along and Jack Tunney forces him into the match, to Brett keeping the sharp shoe on, that should be on a constant loop on the monitors in Titan Towers, in the Performance Center, in any trainee's fucking room, on a constant loop, telling them that is how you be a heel. Lesson 101.
Yeah, but the flip side is that his stuff from Memphis as babyface, that's how you be legitimate, connecting with the audience babyface. And the one thing I say as a heel, would you say the shelf light, the ceiling on him as a heel is lower than as a babyface?
I think so. And it's interesting though, because, and what you mentioned there, SummerSlam 93, we talked about that previously when we were ranking the best SummerSlam matches of all time. We talked at length about that match because it is one of my all time favourite heel performances.
It's marvellous.
But at the same time, I'm inclined to go babyface, because I just think when I watch that stuff back with Memphis, and again, I didn't even live through it, but to me, the fact that I can still, when he does those promos, and he can go all over the place, he can be funny and charismatic and charming to the live studio audience, he can be sat down talking to Lance Russell and be as solemn and self-pitying, but not too much. Yeah, there's a promo on YouTube you can find where he's talking about this, a match he had with a Super Destroyer that's coming up, and he's so quiet, talking about how he's a Cleveland Browns fan, and they lost a big game recently. I feel like as a fan, they let me down. I feel like I've let the fans down in the same way, because they see me the way that I see my sports team. And so that local thing that is very hard to kind of catch on a national level. I love Lawler's work in the ring as a heel in that match with Brett, because he gets to do the ridiculous stooging. He gets to flex the bicep in the corner with his big wide eyes and his ridiculous hairdo. He gets to use the crutch as a weapon. He gets to do all that great shtick. As a heel commentator, he's fantastic. There's so many times, you know, we've just wrapped up our 1997 Monday Night War timeline section. But Lawler's kind of like the underrated gem of that year for me, in terms of, I forgot how great he was on commentary. You know, the ECW show in particular, he's just on fire in that show. There's one point where Goldust doing a promo backstage and you can barely hear him, and Vincent Mann just, and there's an ECW match in the ring, which is the key to this, and Vincent Mann on commentary goes, sorry about that, we've got some technical difficulties backstage, and then Jerry Lawler comes back with some technical difficulties in the ring, which is just great, because he just hates ECW.
It's this thing, you went babyface, and I said, this is the toughest one for me, and trying to analyse, you know, a position you can maximise the guy's heel or face. And yeah, the ceiling as a heel for me on the national stage is lower, but then he never did the face stuff on the national stage.
No, exactly. So
that was the trade-off for me. A real tough one.
Really tough. And I just think that and the reason I mentioned that specifically about him being great on commentary is because as a character, the promo guy, we never got to see him that much as a babyface on the national level, like you said, Kieran. comparing them as workers in the ring, and the reason I mentioned SummerSlam 93, I think he's better as a babyface, to be quite honest. I love it. I love the way he sells. I love the way that you can see what his face would look like, no matter if you can see his face or not, because his body language is so expressive. His punches are absolutely fucking incredible when he gets to rattle a bunch of them off as a heel in a row. The way he sells less and less, and he's about to make his comeback and pull down the strap. I love that style. You know, I love the matches with Savage. I just think that Lawler is absolutely fantastic. His ability to cut promos that are witty and funny and sarcastic as a babyface is a charming thing, because there's not too many guys that can pull that off. And I think, and as a heel, but at the same time as a heel, he was sharp as a tack. He was funny, but he always was able to keep it so that you weren't actually a King fan, which I think is another kind of underrated thing that Jerry Lawler did that was excellent, because when you're the funny guy, it's hard to be a heel. But he always had that little bit of something that made you hate Jerry Lawler, because he just looked like a sleazy fuck. Yeah. And there's no way you're cheering him over Bret Hart, you know?
I think it's probably like an issue of going back and watching someone like Jerry Lawler is such a breath of fresh air to what we're watching in the current, you know, roster right now, where every heel has to come across as badass or cool. And you don't get someone like Jerry the King Lawler, who was so willing to look like an idiot, not necessarily always the comedic effect, but was always willing to get his ass kicked at the right time. And you just don't get that anymore with heels. And so that's why, probably for me, like babyfaces, there's loads of great babyfaces throughout the history, but a truly great heel, which, whilst I'll find him funny, I still want to see him get his ass kicked. With people like Macho Man and Rock, I loved them as heels, and I wanted them to win.
Yeah.
I wanted them to win all the time, because I've always been a heel guy. But King's the one of the few heels where it's just like, I love you, I love watching you, but I don't ever want to see you win. I want to see you get your ass whipped, because you're the sort of person that needs to get their ass kicked. And he's the sort of person who could get his ass kicked every fucking night. And you know what? He would just reheat himself the
come
next
back,
night. He'd just
the
come
promo.
Back as if nothing happened, because he has that ability. How many people can you say that today?
Yeah. Do one more slimy, sleazy thing and get his heat right back. As a bumper, I think Lawler was better as a babyface, but then again, that's because most of his prime athletically speaking, was as a babyface. That kind of skews it in that favour as well. You mentioned the Corbin series. I don't want to mention that in passing in that way, in a sense, just because that was so absolutely fantastic. And it's funny watching him on Letterman, because obviously that he's kind of cast in the role. At first, the fans kind of treat him like he's the bad guy, but he's just so charming and so fucking great that people just like him and laugh at his jokes and are with him anyway. And there's another thing that we've watched before, and I recommend anybody watch the Memphis Heat documentary. And I remember hearing me and you watching it, where that they're building up that Lawler Rocky Johnson wrestler versus boxer match on the news, where they're doing the weigh-ins, and the way Lawler just carries himself, he's just absolutely sublime. He's just amazing. He knows how to be a star. I just think he's excellent as a babyface. He's excellent as a heel. This one could go either way, but in terms of personal preference and in terms of better, I'm going to go babyface, just because I love that stuff.
It's such a tough one, and I'm really on the fence, to be honest. I mean, you swayed me to go the other way, but he's just great. He's the king.
He is the king. We're going to get to some feedback here from you guys on what you thought. Noid from TPWW says he's great at both. Regarded by many of his peers to be one of the best workers and successes in wrestling as either a babyface or a heel. He and Bill Dundee would trade face/heel to keep things generating money in Memphis, but I think overall I give the nod to King as being a better babyface, just because most of his classics involved him as the hero of Memphis wrestling. Tiger Rick from the UK Fan Forum says I'd have to go heel, given that I've seen more of his stuff on a national level, where he's just the most brilliant and hilarious heat seeker, compared to his local work where he was Hulk Hogan before Hogan was Hulk Hogan. Lawler had an uncanny ability to make you laugh your socks off without even starting to like him, which is actually in line with what we said earlier on. He was an incredible heel. I wish we got to see him work opposite Hogan in the mid-80s WWF. That would have been incredible. Jap Jesus from F4W says, Lawler can legitimately go either way. He's an excellent heel, but he packed the Mid-South Coliseum for years as a face every Monday, and it's hard to argue with that. Creepy Crawl from WrestlingForum.com says, heel. He has a knack for knowing exactly where that line is when it comes to being too comedic for the fans to still hate him. What I'm saying is that while Rock's heel work was great, it was so hilarious that it was hard to hate him. Lawler also has a certain element about him that can be a nuisance, which works well for him. He knows what to say to get under someone's skin and can do it with an element of humour, and you still want to punch him. Project Humanoid from FOW says, "Babyface, truly a master on both sides. But Lawler was one of the few, if not only guys in wrestling, who could draw just as effectively as the number one bad guy in a territory as he could as the number one good guy. But it's his versatility at playing the everyman and the Superman that makes him a better babyface. Lawler could go a little over the top with comedy as a heel, especially in his national run in the WWF. But as he demonstrated during a short program with The Miz a few years back, he's got an uncanny ability to get people behind him." Air Aid from the UK Fan Forum chimes in and says, "He was a fantastic babyface, but I've had to watch his best stuff retrospectively as opposed to watching his mid-90s WWF run as it happened. He was the biggest cunt ever in the Bret run, achieving levels of heat with nothing more than words that a load of guys would love to get with 100 gang beatdowns or chair shots. He managed later on to make me hate him all over again in his run with Jake, who I dismissed as a washed-up has-been, but I was perfectly happy to cheer for anyone against the King. For the babyface or heel debate, I struggle to imagine loving anyone as much as I hated Lawler." Joe Von Kramer from Pro Wrestling Only says, "I have trouble connecting with him as a babyface, despite his objective greatness in the role. Personally, I'm not sure I buy it. I struggle to invest in him. He feels much more natural to me as a heel, especially out of the ring cutting his promos. I watched a good chunk of his heel run in 1990 USWA, so I'll go heel." Matt Applin on the Facebook page, which you can like, obviously, facebook.com/scgradio, says, "As an avid fan for 27 years now, this may have been one of the more difficult subjects to ponder over. Hogan, Slaughter, Austin, and Guerrero that we're going to get to were great regardless of whether they were face or heel. Yet teen heartthrob Jerry Lawler was most definitely best as a heel. His time in Memphis, which I've watched retrospectively after hearing my grandfather's Million Lawler stories, is well documented and rightfully took his place on the throne as their true king. It was in 1993 that I finally realized my grandfather wasn't a rambling, senile old man. His Lawler stories were validated. I believe that Lawler was the top heel in the WWF that year. Even though Yoko was champion and Shawn Michaels was an entertaining, cocky asshole, it was the King who had the more heated feud that year. His comments about the Hart family, his injured knee after pulling all those children out of the burning bus, was straight out of the heel textbook." There you go. "If it wasn't for the Lawler-Hart feud in 93, I may have become just another statistic and joined the masses that stopped watching wrestling, especially after that piece of bald bronze shit Hogan took a giant dump on Bret Hart right in the middle of Caesar's Palace." So that sums up that, again, in the feedback, very much a divide, almost 50-50 completely in terms of the split on whether they think Lawler's better as a babyface or a heel.
The one thing I would say, although I've personally gone heel, if anyone's looking for a sort of defence of going for the sort of the more babyface side of Lawler's work, it would be what the emailer referenced there, which is, you know, the number of times that they sold out the Coliseum.
Yeah.
You know, to be able to do that on such, you know, what, every Monday night, was it? The
Coliseum? Yep.
To be able to do it every Monday night as a babyface, got to be so difficult. And you're not going to pull that off unless you're exceptional in the role.
Moving along now to a completely different individual and completely different mentality. We're talking about Hulk Hogan here. Better heel, better babyface. Let's get to the feedback first, because I think this is going to be an interesting bunch of feedback to play off. Cabraxel from Wrestling Forum says, "Tough one. He was gold as a heel, and even while face, he had some heelish tendencies that started getting him some booze for being a two-face. But that run as a face in his prime is almost unbeatable. Even then, as the little heel brat I was, I still enjoyed him through 1990, and that is saying something." Gorgeous Dale Newstead from TPWW says, "As good as his NWO run was, he is best as the ruler of Hulkamania. I'm talking almost everything before 1991. Realistically, barring some memorable moments, nothing he did ever came close to that 84 to 91 run. It had a lot to do with the steroid stuff and outside distractions getting to him. I think he lost sight of what made him truly an awesome force in wrestling and kind of lost his untouchable, awesome aura. And as bad as it sounds, him losing all that muscle mass made him seem so much less larger than life. It seems like it would mean not too much, but when a body guy who looks like a superhero ceases to resemble a superhero, it certainly takes away a certain something. It kills the suspension of disbelief. Just look at him in 1988 compared to 1993. It's not even the same guy. Time and a lack of vitamins can be a cruel mistress." Air Raid from the UK Fan Forum says, "Probably spitting in the wind here, but it's down to personal preference. While I do love a lot of his hero performances today, I was so sick of him in the mid-90s that his heel turn was a real game changer. I absolutely love the NWO run in 96 and 97, and WCW harnessed the fact that so many people, especially in the southern states, were sick of Hogan, by making that into the desired reaction. Whether it was Luger or DDP or Sting or Goldberg, I was always looking forward to someone giving that twat what he had coming to him. Hulkamania nostalgia is great, but for genuine emotional response, Hollywood did it for me. Hated him." Emprise from Pro Wrestling Only says, "Very polarizing, because one can see it from either side. Some believe that Hogan was a better face as he continued to get the loudest pops for almost 8 years straight. However, when he turned heel, it was somewhat the story of legend. The lasting effects of NWO Hogan were felt for a long time, however, as he didn't defend the title, barely was on TV during this time, and always seemed to put himself and his friends in prime positioning. I would much prefer the Hogan face run of 84 to 92 myself, because it became much of what a stereotypical babyface would be for years to come." Michael3165 from the UK Fan Forum says, "This was a tough one. His heel turn returned kicked off one of the biggest boom periods of the last 30 years. However, he was the ultimate good guy for years and sold wrestling off of the patriotic guy who wanted to be the role model for the children. His matches with Warrior, Savage, Earthquake, Flair, and others really stand out as classic Hogan as a character. Theo Diaz from TPWW says, "Look, I just want to say I'm with you guys on the notion that Hogan's initial run was more heel than anything. From denying Andre a title shot, to cheating in the 88 Rumble, to throwing out his buddies in subsequent years, to screwing Sid in 92, lusting after Elizabeth under Savage's nose, throwing human ashes into The Undertaker's face at Tuesday in Texas as soon as on the take Tony wasn't looking, of course, to stealing a title shot at WrestleMania 9, the man was a heel throughout all of that. I don't know how that answers the question, but yeah." Jerry Von Kramer from Pro Wrestling Only says, "I recognise objectively that he's one of the all-time great babyfaces, but again, personally, I never connected with him and spent most of my childhood hating him. As Hollywood Hogan, he was a real snivelling, Memphis-y chicken shit coward dipshit of a heel and excelled in that role. So heel for me." And Tiger Rick from the UK Fan Forum says, "Babyface. Not only because as a worker he had incredible timing and knew how to play the audience's emotions like a violin, but also because for all the success of the NWO, I found his heel character repetitive and utterly shit. It was occasionally inspired, but just generally consisted of Hogan trying to be as cool as guys decades younger than him, while Eric Bischoff verbally sucked him off. I'd rather watch his red and yellow stuff any day of the week." So a good range of opinions there. And that's kind of why I want to do those first, because to me, this one, when we thought of this, is a slam dunk. It's Hulk Hogan babyface for me all the way.
Whatever effects you might want to factor in of the NWO on the business, you know, the counter can be said for his babyface run. It's hard. I mean, I was never a big Hogan fan. So I wasn't, you know, emotionally I don't have any attachment to him, but when you watch back the charisma he has as a face, I think his work, maybe because of the time in his life when he predominantly worked, he's obviously taken away his early career, his face works much better. He's underrated as a seller baby face. He really let guys get heat on him. When he's doing, he's sweating in his hairs and his eyes and he's pushing his hair out his face. There's real good little subtle mannerisms. He connects the crowd much better than he was as a heel in my book. The generational thing, part of the reason why he turned, because it was that generation, we were, you know, a lot of the guys like us, like most of us probably at that time, and most people listening, yeah, were sick of that babyface shtick in the mid-90s. But that, to me, doesn't take away from the effect he had on the earlier generation and how connected he was to the audience in the mid to late 80s. And I just think, yeah, easy babyface for me.
I do want to know your thoughts here, Carl, because you were a little Hulkamaniac way back when. And again, just speaking for me, for myself, and I guess Kieran too, from based on what you just said there, Hogan never did it for me when I was a kid. He seemed a little bit plain, I guess, for lack of a better term, to me.
As much as there was sort of a toing and throwing over Jerry Lawler, again, I'm with Kieran on this one. For me, it was a very easy decision, and it's Hogan babyface all the way. Yes. It shouldn't be understated the significance of the heel turn with respect to WCW and their business. I think it somewhat gets overstated in terms of this Hogan heel turn. Hogan's heel turn itself did not lead to the next boom period for wrestling as a whole. It was the strength of one company, as we've seen play out over our podcast that reviewing the Monday Night Wars. And there's something about that heel run. He's trying to come across as cool and it's failing, and that's why people dislike him. But I watch some of that stuff back now and think, thank God Hall and Nash were there for this group, because if it's just heel Hogan, my God, the wheels come off this thing pretty quickly to me.
But Hogan was so much more money, and that's the thing that's completely, yeah, as we've looked at, yeah, over the course of our Monday Night War timelines, Hogan's where the money is, and for that period of time as a heel, his work in the ring, I agree with you, Kieran, completely falls off a cliff when he's, and granted, again, it is the period of time, he wasn't doing much as a heel. As a working babyface, he's fantastically underrated in terms of his ability to connect to the crowd. And to your point, as a heel in the NWO, his matches don't really connect to the crowd very often at all.
Yeah, I just think without Hall and Nash there as linchpins in those early stages, I can't get away from the sense that, not to say it wouldn't have been an effectual heel turn, but it wouldn't have been what it became, if that makes sense. Without having them there as a supporting cast to actually make it seem cool, because Hogan's not going to do it. I don't think it would have had the traction that it ended up having ultimately. As you referenced there, Liam, yes, I was a Hulkamaniac as a child. It's my cross to bear.
I know, by the way, the Dave Sullivan song is now going to close this show, just so you know, for the playback, Carl, so you can listen in and you can sing along.
Wonderful. But yeah, whilst I referenced the significance of his heel turn for WCW's business individually. The national expansion is built off the back of Hulk Hogan. And people can argue, yes, Vince was there. You know, it's Vince's brainchild. Vince could have got someone else in that role. Well, Hogan was the one in the role at the end of the day. And he's the one that brought fans in. And to Kieran's point, he's very underrated as a babyface seller. You know, especially on those rare occasions he'd get a bit of juice as well. And I'm not talking the I'm not talking the Zahorian juice.
Yeah.
I'm talking the
8 years more of that wasn't a little bit.
I'm talking the more natural kind. And I think that's the way that the business exploded, or at least the perception of the business, if you like. Because I don't want to give the impression that I'm buying into this whole McMahon, he took it out the smoky carnival atmosphere, all that bollocks. Yeah, don't get me wrong. I'm not falling for that McMyth by any means, folks. But the perception he gave wrestling, or helped to give wrestling, going forward for so many years. What was the Paul Heyman line? You took Hulk Hogan's sweat and you built Titan Towers?
Yeah.
That, for me, just sort of sums up that babyface run nicely.
A couple of contributors mentioned as well the heels kind of stick that he built into his throughout his face run. Yeah. But I think that's important because it gave him the edge. He was a man's man. He wasn't just, you know, this squeaky clean guy. He's a guy who, when he got down and dirty, he would, you know, he'd throw some shit too. So I understand it. And when you watch in retrospect, in the context of the time, it was just he was the ultimate babyface at that time. So
in most cases, he wasn't the first person to do it. He was the retaliator. Mm. So sort of it helped give him sort of the moral equivalency, if you like.
Yeah, not the 92. It didn't, Carl.
Well, you know, everyone has a bad day at the office. Hacksaw Jim Duggan used a plank of wood, for Christ's sake, for years.
Yeah, I was kind of different from the other guys. I actually did struggle with this because I'm almost tempted to go with the answer of neither. Because what this podcast was about was we're not just trying to come up with a definitive list, but what our personal opinions were of what our preference was. So when trying to decide what type of Hogan I liked, when did I actually like Hogan? Was it Lust Hogan? No, it wasn't. Was it the, you know, oh, it's all about me and not about Ultimate Warrior winning the title? No, it wasn't. Was it about, you know, him main event in WrestleMania 7 with Sergeant Slaughter in, wasn't for me at the time, but a controversial angle, whilst Randy Savage was putting his career on the line?
See?
No, no, it wasn't.
Was it
him putting on this shit main event with Sid Justice, which was just the absolute fucking drizzling shit? No, I didn't like him then. Was it when he came in and stole Bret Hart's title and also throwing powder in Yokozuna's eye, doing the modern, well, the 93 equivalent of, you know, a Sheamus cash-in? No, it wasn't. Was it when he went into WCW in 94 and then started feuding with the Dungeon of Doom? No, not then. What about his 2002 one-month title run? No, and let's not forget Mr. America. So, yeah, tricky one. Don't think I've really ever liked him as a babyface. But looking into the heel side of things, whilst I was initially very interested in the heel side when I first saw that Bash at the Beach, that first heel promo, I think is probably the best thing he's ever done in any way, shape or form, just because it's kind of like you can almost kind of tell the unease that he has doing it. Like, it's like there's kind of like a naturalness to it, but you can tell at the same time he's kind of like, he's turtle heading, you know. He's worried about what he's doing.
He's thinking, "Shit, my merchandise sales.
His merch is going down." But I absolutely agree with Carl. I think like, and that, because with the whole Nash and Hall situation, and I mentioned it on the last podcast about how that group was not cool unless Nash was around with the new black and white outfit, and it was definitely a better look for him. And, you know, some of the mannerisms kind of worked because, as you guys mentioned, he was already doing the occasional, you know, rake of the back or like the claw or whatever like that, or a certain type of moves that he would do as a babyface. So it wasn't too much of a heavy transition. He just did the same moveset again. But after a while, you start seeing like a desperate man trying to look cool and trying to make people forget he's bald under that bandana. and so because of that, the initial run, like maybe like the first few months of him being a heel, I thought was very entertaining because it was something new and something fresh because he'd been a babyface for so long. But then after that, he just got constantly uncool, like your dad dancing at a wedding. Like, so when he was a babyface, he acted more like a heel. When he was a heel, he was trying to act like a babyface. it's either between the first few months of his heel run, or to try and think of a time period when he was a babyface, which I could buy into, I'll probably say on the build up to WrestleMania 3, and watching all the stuff with Andre and Heenan and so on, and then when you talk about his selling and so on, you can really see it then with like Andre, mainly because he fucking had to. It's kind of tricky on personal preference. I'd rather watch him as a heel, but just because I don't like the guy. But I kind of get the fandom of Hulk Hogan. I get the fact that we wouldn't be really probably sat here talking about wrestling or doing a podcast if it wasn't for Hulk Hogan, however much of a bitter pill that is to swallow. So I'm going to bitterly say babyface.
It's interesting because we are, I didn't think I'm out of line saying this, 90s kids in terms of our wrestling viewing as we grew up. And if you look at the decade of the 90s, the most effective Hogan was as a heel in the NWO. For those who grew up in the 80s, like I think it was you, Kieran, who said this, for the previous generation, they saw Hogan in his prime at that moment, seeing how big he was. We didn't get to see that in his prime over here in England. There's one thing that I just want to say a quick story about when you talk about him being the guy who's out of touch. I was watching an episode of Nitro from 99, and there's one spot where there's a Ric Flair promo playing, right? And you're seeing Nash and Hogan watch the promo, and he says, Ric Flair says he's the nature boy, and Kevin Nash, as a wisecrack, says, Birdie Landell. And Hulk Hogan, trying to be cool and clever, says, Buddy Rose. Completely, there's no joke there. There's like, he's just trying to like keep up with Nash in the comedy stakes, not realizing the joke, not understanding the context of what the cool guy is saying.
What do you think, they're playing a game of name famous buddies?
That's what I mean! Like, why would you say that?
Playing a game, brother.
Yeah, it's like, why would you say that? It's completely out of context. He doesn't know. He's trying to keep up with somebody who's trying to be witty and you know, inside.
He's a man child.
And he can't do it. And it's just funny to see him in that element with Nash.
He was definitely more a product of the 80s, where kind of like I don't know, maybe the aspect of what makes people cool was probably a little bit more diluted back in the 80s. If you look at the fashion alone,
Schwarzenegger, Stallone, yeah, fucking so big action hero guys.
Well, actually that's the thing. Well, there's a decent point there you'd bring up, because like the 80s he would look cool, and in the 80s, you know, Sly Stallone and Schwarzenegger were also very cool. But once you get to the 90s, if you actually look at both of their careers as well, those movie stars, their careers actually started faltering, particularly in the late 90s. They seemed cool in the 80s, but by the time you get to the 90s, they're just getting a little bit old to be cool.
Terminator 2 was in the 90s, goddammit.
So it's very early 90s.
So it was Jingle All the Way. And I love that film.
On you.
On to the next one on the list now, and we are talking about Sergeant Slaughter. It's an interesting one here because, and this came up a lot in the feedback of a lot of people saying they didn't really want to commit, they were kind of riding the fence on this one because they hadn't seen enough of early Sergeant Slaughter. And I understand that part of the debate completely, because Sergeant Slaughter from the early 90s was never a guy that I really wanted to spend any time on our podcast dedicating time to, if I could be completely honest. But Kieran, I mentioned this to you previously, that there was a bit of a renaissance I came to a few years ago on Slaughter, when I was watching old stuff back that I'd never seen before, particularly his team with Don Knoedel. And my eyes were just stretched wide open when I got to see, you seek out stuff like the alley fight with Patterson, the boot camp match with Sheik. You get to see, obviously his promos in 84, his stuff with Backlund in 81. It's just, to me, the more I see of Slaughter in the 4-year period from 80 to 84, the more I actually want to kind of spend time talking about him and kind of diverting people, if you haven't seen Slaughter from that period to that time. So I'm keen, and I sent some links out to you guys to kind of get your thoughts on this period of Slaughter. If you hadn't seen it previously, you may have. I just wanted to see what everybody thought, because I think Sergeant Slaughter is the dick drill sergeant heel in that team with Don Knoedel is fantastic.
I agree wholeheartedly. Slaughter is sort of the flag-waving Americana type thing, just doesn't quite click with me. And I think it's because, having seen Hogan in such a pronounced, in the similar sort of role in such a pronounced way, and to have such a big effect, to then see Slaughter trying it similarly beforehand, and then sort of at times in the AWA in fleeting appearances here and there, it didn't click for obvious reasons.
And the less said about that, I want my country back phase, the better.
Yeah, let's just skip right past that bit. By the same token, him as a heel, again, discounting his early 90s WWF run, there's something that just seems like a natural fit there to me when it comes to, you mentioned there, the prick drill sergeant. And I was familiar with his tag team with Knoedl. I'd seen a couple of bits and pieces. I think it was referenced on Steamboat's DVD as well, yep, when they were feuding with him and Jay Youngblood. But to watch back some of the stuff that that you sent over prior to the podcast, just to sort of get reacquainted with it, and then that, along with stuff like the heel program with Patterson, there seems to me it's just a natural fit of the obnoxious bully.
Yeah,
and I think it's the physical appearance of Slaughter that does it as well. The sort of the big domineering there with the jaw sticking out, the sort of rotund stomach. You know, just, you
come over.
Comb over, you know. You can picture the bitter man, can't you?
Yeah,
a bit like me.
You ain't got enough hair for a comb over, dude.
I call it an 8-inch part. But yeah, his.
I've got an 8-inch part, but it's my completely different. Continue.
His appearance to me just naturally fits that of a bully, and I think I'm sort of more naturally drawn to that and get more enjoyment out of seeing that than any attempt of him playing off Mr. America with a flag waving.
Yeah, same for me. But it's interesting watching, again, talk about products of their times, late 70s up to mid 80s. When he is a face, like, I've watched a few of his matches with like Sheik and Volkov, the tag matches, obviously the boot camp match as well, and like, he's super over.
Oh, he's very over.
And that's not to be discounted, but for me, it's such a one-trick pony. It's like, lest we forget, Jack Swagger looked like he was over against Rusev the other year.
Yeah,
it's a product of the opponent and the times for me. I didn't think he had a really lasting charisma as a babyface. Obviously, the look, the voice, everything lends to heel, and I just prefer him as a working heel as well.
He's yeah, slobber,
the slobber. But the thing, you know, the big, the bump into over the turnbuckle,
The bump into the post.
Yeah, which he did loads. Obviously, the size and inability to pull out that bump for a smaller guy. And then the match with Patterson's fantastic. Pat is a fiery babyface. That's one for me.
Complete with I Love New York still. Right? Yeah.
Just hammer that point home.
Yeah. But Pat's such a fiery babyface, and that charisma. Watching that after Slaughter face matches, it's like, it's really the product of the times and the scenario got him over into that point for me. Maybe I'm wrong, again, not being around at the time, but viewing it back, that's how I perceived it. It just an easy cheap shine.
Yeah.
You talk about cheap heat, it's cheap shine. And just the longevity, the voice, the bully nature, as you said, Carl, the ability to then pull out a bump for a smaller guy, just much more naturally suiting a heel for me.
I love that one promo. It's him, Knoedl, and Greg Valentine all rocking suits, and it's part of the Steamboat Youngblood feud where the kid, like Tommy Pearson, sends in a picture of Steamboat and Youngblood, and Sarge is there in a suit and with a cigar, and he puts the cigar out in the picture and goes, "Here you go, Tommy Pearson!" And he rips it up and he spits on it, and he rips up the headdress and the lei that they, you know, that Steamboat and Youngblood had offered to give the kid because they were so touched by the drawing. It's like, it's just heels. It's stupidity, really, but it's just so it's done in such a funny manner that you can't not get into this.
What's the one? I think it was when he's doing an interview and he's going over the first match when they cheat.
Yeah.
When he does the
got a commentary over the top.
Yeah, the commentary over when he does the slaughter cannon, whatever it is.
The slaughter cannon.
And he's just like sort of bullshit heel stuff. He's makes straight face. It's
I was trying to tell the referee to get him back in the ring while he's kicking the other guy.
Yeah. I'm trying to help him get in the ring. It's like,
never the best promo guy, I don't think.
No,
don't,
I think
in either role.
No, but again, naturally suited being hated in the role of the gruff drill sergeant. Then it's a shortcoming that you could overcome as a heel than as a face. And I think the face momentum is a product of the time, the occasion, the world.
And my God, were they hot for that fucking boot camp match in MSG?
Well,
it goes without saying because that match is obviously so highly lauded, but that crowd was molten.
Yeah, I think, well, all the ones, I mean, it was Sheik, a couple of the Sheik Volkov tags as well, they were nuclear heel all day for me.
Yeah, and it's, like I said, I think it's very easy to get sort of heel as well, to get an instant heel reaction from those fans, given sort of, you know, that you're not that far removed from things like the Iranian hostage crisis, and obviously we're still in the midst of the Cold War at that point with Reagan as president, and you know, the
Afghan war on the go.
The Afghan war is still going. So there's that sort of natural conflict in the wider world. It's easy. It's quite easy for fans to get wrapped up in that and to draw a reaction from it.
Every now and again, you know, because it's on personal opinions, you just get to a name where you don't really connect with the guy at all, whether they're babyface or heels. And no matter like how everyone else will talk about that person with passion, you just don't get anything from either way. I mean, I'm sure there are Matt Hardy fans out there, but it's just
and he keeps the room at a toasty 75 degrees.
And he hates mustard though.
But he loves low fat shakes.
See, you guys like him anyway. What are you talking about?
It's the first name that came to mind. Yeah. So I kind of like watched like a lot of his stuff back, and just like, yeah, I can't connect with him as a babyface at all. His face was built to be a heel. Like, he doesn't look like a good guy. You're talking about like the chin that just goes on forever, with the tiny little like freaking pencil moustache. The crazy, again, the crazy eyes, if I kind of cross mutate with this with the 91 angle. So looking into, you know, his heel work to kind of justify this, yeah, there's some great stuff there, and I think while he doesn't kind of do it for me like at all in terms of like being like a top guy I'd want to watch, there are aspects to him that I can appreciate. In fairness to him, he does take some pretty damn good bumps. And I mean, you were commenting about like the one where he hits the turnbuckle, floats over the turnbuckle and goes to the outside, which is like, I don't remember seeing anyone else do that in the same way. I don't think probably anyone's stupid enough, that's why. And so like when I first saw that was in the Patterson match, wasn't it?
Yeah.
At least when I saw it. And he's fucking gushing like hell. And I was thinking, wow, fucking hell, I've never seen...
Very good bleeder.
Very good bleeder. It's, you know, and I think, and suddenly kind of watching that, going, you know, actually, this guy's pretty good, like, bumper. Even if we dare go into it, go as far as, like, 91, when he's being a heel there as well. You know, he did some good bumps at that age as well, particularly, you know, again, just mention his age, also his general fitness.
Yeah, he took the stunner well in 97 too, let's not forget.
You know, yeah, by what you guys already said, slightly underrated in terms of performance as a character as well, because... I actually think like he's actually a decent promo. I don't think he's anywhere near the league of Jerry the King Lawler, but I think he's great at being that cheesy pantomime heel, because he has such that distinguished look about him, like his voice, and he really does ham it up. It is as if at any moment you're going to have the crowd going, it's behind you, kind of thing to it. Like the way he drones on. Puke, you know, whatever.
Chant Goma instead.
Yeah,
well, it
yeah.
could have been a reasonable chant during the Patterson feud.
But hey. But you know, whatever.
Every week,
without fail, for someone who associated with G.I. Joe and so on, and being like a kind of babyface kind of character, to suddenly like turn around and kind of like, this is similar to Hogan, really. To suddenly just kind of sweep that away, doing something that's really quite. Well, to them and to people in America was quite wrong and very close to the knuckle. Considering that, I thought he did a solid job of it, you know, it could, with a difficult angle, which was always going to affect his career and is always going to be, like, to some people, a black mark. But I thought he gave it a decent... What's the word? The thesaurus in the corner. Is it a plum? Is it
plum?
A plum. Aplomb. Yeah, it gives a lot of aplomb, I guess, whatever.
I just want to say about, talk about the facials. Jerry Lawler only had a punch me face when he was being a heel, because when he's a face, he's a legit sympathetic baby face with no punch me at all. Slaughter, I agree, because when he's a baby face, he just has this like simpleton look about him for me. It's like, I felt kind of sorry for him. Yeah, it's like,
he was on Piper's Pit especially.
Yeah,
and like, he sinks his head down when Piper's trying to say, yeah, what about all these people here that don't go to war, you know?
So the sad simpleton didn't really do it for me as a baby face.
Yeah, I agree. Seth82 from TPWW says, just an awesome heel. I love watching his tag team with Don Knoedel. Their feud with Ricky Steamboat and Jay Youngblood in the Mid-Atlantic area was amazing stuff. Al from Pro Wrestling Only says, face slaughter was great against the right opponent like the Iron Sheik, but overall I feel he had a much better gimmick, matches and shelf life as a heel. The Crow from TPWW also says heel. There was a danger someone was going to shoot him just because he was such a good heel. Enough said. So I don't know about that one. That's
one of those McMyths coming out again there.
Liger fan from F4W says, I'm only familiar with his work from the not so early 80s on, but I'd say he's a better good guy. Though since my only exposure to him as a heel was in the role of Iraqi sympathizer in the early 90s, I'm not sure I've got a lot of good material for him as a heel, which, like I said, is a kind of a common feeling amongst a lot of fans. Cabraxel from Wrestling Forum says, heel. I just like the betrayal storyline that I got to see, and going back, his initial heel run was still more enjoyable than what seems a pale comparison to Hogan's Real American. Arrogantly Grateful from Wrestling Forum says, heel without a doubt. His run with General Adnan and Colonel Mustafa was gold. It took some serious balls to do that. But regardless of what you thought of Slaughter as a performer, this was absolutely brilliant. Immortal puke. Pukomaniacs. And did he say something about slime too? That was the ultimate slime, correct? With the chin held high, burning the shirt, you love to see him get beat up after all the shit he'd done. The way Slaughter used to bump his opponents too is incredibly underrated. Those bumps look like he really hurt himself, banging his head on the ring posts and flying into the corner turnbuckle. He's a little underrated, really, as Slaughter at times. As a heel, Slaughter was a bastard. Jerry Von Kramer from Pro Wrestling Only says, I am not sure if Slaughter was ever more over than his 1981 run as a heel in the WWF. And Gok from Pro Wrestling Only says, some people think of Slaughter as a heel and just automatically think of Iraqi sympathizer Slaughter. He had a really long heel run before that, and it was much better. He didn't need to turn on his country to be an effective heel. Dickhead Drill Sergeant is a pretty good character on its own.
I just want to say, given what happened at Survivor Series and the stories going into the show, if on Sunday Slaughter returned as an ISIS sympathiser and even at this age took the belt, would you prefer that to Sheamus winning?
As long as you can still take that corner bump, yes, I would.
Okay.
Yeah, he's definitely a better promo than Sheamus.
Oh, I'm not touching that one.
Moving along to the fourth man that we're going to talk about today. It is Steve Austin. Tiger Rick from the UK Fanforms says, hard to argue against wrestling's greatest ever babyface, so I won't try. He was probably more entertaining as a heel, either in WCW or the early days of Stone Cold, or after his turn in 2001, but not so entertaining that you can discount just how much wrestling's biggest ever national audiences absolutely fucking adored the guy. The Condor from TPWW says, give me 96 to early 97 heel Austin any day. The Generation MC from WrestlingForum.com says, face, because sooner or later, people were going to cheer him no matter how bad the things he did, and the crowd would eat it up. Creepy Core from WrestlingForum.com says, I loved Austin in WCW. I think he is more of a natural heel, and even as a face, has always had a certain element of heel to him, no matter how much the fans cheered him. I think he is a better heel, but obviously most of his success came as a face, and by the time he tried to go back to being a heel, he was just too loved by the audience to pull it off. Edgar the Slouch from UK Fan Forum says, Austin was better as a heel, but only from the period from around King of the Ring 96 to WrestleMania 13. He wasn't cheesy, he wasn't pandering to smart fans, he was just going out and being an out-and-out psychopathic, heel-driven, and motivated by only himself. Look at the clips from him on Livewire where, under the constraints of a live PG audience, he proceeds to rip Todd Pettengill, Sonny, and any phone calls a new one on air whilst advancing his character. The Brainfather from Pro Wrestling Only says, how much did he draw as a face? Versus the heel character that helped decimate the biggest run in wrestling history that was so unpopular? This seems almost silly to me. Sure, in-ring is a heel, but that's unfair, as most of that was before the Owen injury, and was after that against far superior workers to his 98 and 99 runs. Face all the way. Niall Clark from the Facebook page says, Steve Austin is an interesting one. He was a babyface at his peak, but his character was not as clear-cut. It had heel vibes, and the change in times meant that he got a face reaction. Well, that because he was freaking awesome. Anyway, I personally preferred heel Austin in late 96 to 97. It might have just been the feud with Bret, but his lines such as, if you put the letter S before Hitman, you have my exact opinion of Bret Hart were gold. And Airid from the UK Fan Forum wraps this one up and says, I thought Stone Cold was phenomenally entertaining as a heel, but he was best as a babyface. He was the company figurehead, and what every episode of TV was about for practically 2 years straight, and it never got old. Bell to bell, he'd flail around, getting battered due to some dirty heel cheating or the odds stacked ridiculously against him, and all you wanted was for him to get up, start swinging, and win in the end, and invariably he would. People say anti-hero, but he was totally a hero. Fair enough, he had fairly loose morals and was a selfish bastard, but he stood up for himself, took no bullshit, never ran, and never backed down from anything. I loved heel Austin for entertainment, but I never hated him. He's a babyface. So this is an interesting one here, because the second half, the last thing you guys were going to mention, there's a bit of a blurred line here between the guys. That's why I've left them all in a row here. Steve Austin, babyface or heel? Carl, I know you're dying to get on this one as well, because Steve Austin, artistically, is it much of a juggling act for you?
Steve Austin. The man brings a tear to my eye, flutter to my heart, and a spring in my step.
And a bulge in your pants.
And a great big raging bulge, which I can imagine is only similar to when someone says Shawn Michaels to Kieran.
Or Hulk Hogan to the Iron Sheik.
Kieran, Jemu Kerch.
I actually think it is a little bit difficult in the sense of I think his heel work is tremendous. What a lot of the emailers didn't mention there, and some of the stuff that I've found fantastic, I know you're a big fan as well, Liam, is the Hollywood Blonde with Pillman. Yeah. Some of the great stuff he'd come out with there, you know, the great antique that is Arn Anderson. You know, you don't, all you got to do to see the stars is look at the back of our tights.
Yeah. Our opponent today has got a moonsault that makes Houston Liger look like he's moving in slow motion.
It's brilliant stuff, but as a couple of the emailers have referenced there, and as we've sort of talked about with others, it's never made me hate him. Mm. So in that sense, I suppose it's never really worked, has it? You know, I'd probably be a bit difficult in that sense for me to say he was better as a heel, because it never got that heel reaction from me. Even the stuff with, and we've talked before about how detrimental it was numbers wise for business. Some of the heel stuff he does in 2001, I still get a kick out of.
Oh, match with Angle, he's just talking about it before. Know. He's an absolute ruthless cunt in that match. A savage animal, and he's superb in the role.
Oh, beating the shit out of Lita with a chair. I find that fantastic. with the guitar as well, and when Vince is doing the pep talk and his chest just bulges out during the invasion. It's absolute comedy gold. It was the making of Austin, that the heel run. One of the emailers referenced it there again about the stuff from Livewire. I don't know if any of you have seen it. There's about a sort of 7 or 8 minute compilation video of just sort of Steve Austin bits, and it jumps around a lot, and it's got him beating up the no marks outside Pillman's house. It's got him shoving the woman out of the way when she tries to put makeup on him before the episode of Livewire. He's screaming at some production guy off camera because he's trying to count him down, and no one needs to count down Steve Austin.
This is the compilation that's on there because Stone Cold said so.
Is that where it's taken from?
It's taken from the first bit, because Stone Cold said so VHS they released on Austin, so it's bits and pieces of everything he'd done, including the Livewire clips, including what you're talking about there, which is the studio thing with him and Brett, where he eventually just flips out and throws the guy into the big metal stairs at the end.
Like I say, it's all fantastic stuff, but much like the Hogan one, in the way the national expansion was built largely off Hogan's back, the sort of the Phoenix rising from the ashes at the end of 97 and going through 98 for the WWF is Steve Austin, and it's Steve Austin as a babyface. And yes, there's still heel traits to the character, but the reactions he gets during that period where fans just go absolutely apeshit, just absolutely out of their mind. In a lot of cases where he doesn't do an awful lot. Yes, he'd get big reactions for, say, the beer truck or the Zamboni. But to use a couple of other examples that aren't referenced so much or aren't drawn to, and you look for good examples of just ballistic crowd reactions, you got when Foley first wins the title. All Austin isn't seen on the entire show. He just comes out, hits Rock with a chair, puts Foley on top of him, walks out. The crowd are going apeshit before he's even got to the ring and hit and picked up the chair.
It's nuts.
Absolutely. And another one only a few weeks later when they've got the wrestling for the number 30 spot that China wins. Mm. And Austin literally does nothing. The glass, well, other than walk to the ring, he does nothing. The glass breaks. The crowd go out of their mind. There's guys jumping up and down on the rails, just swinging their arms wildly. And all he does is walk down to the ring and stare at Vince so Vince can get thrown out by China. He does nothing else. And they're just going ballistic throughout. You know, using the same analogy that I used for Hogan, the way that the babyface run of Steve Austin brings the company back to the promised land, for me, that alone means it has to be Steve Austin as a babyface.
Yeah, same for me. This is the easiest one of the lot for me. And you've mentioned it before. For me, the only heel stuff to be considered heel stuff is that 2001 in-ring stuff when he's being a pure heel. The comedy stuff with the Blondes and even the 96, 97 stuff, he was a babyface. Yeah. I don't care. And this, you know, the anti-hero, Shades of Grey bullshit, which people like Vince Russo have propagated for all these years, it was bullshit. He was a babyface.
Yeah.
I think was it Pillman said to him as
Pillman
well?
Pillman would say it all the time. Yeah. Every time he'd come back, you're a babyface kid.
Yeah, it's
and he'd hate it.
Like the Hogan stuff, he maybe didn't realise it, but like the Hogan thing, it was a symptom of the times. That the Hogan stuff, the reason people turned, one of the reasons people had rejected Hogan in the early to mid 90s was he was, you know, a guy out of his time kind of thing. The Austin babyface, when he was even a heel before he'd found himself as a face, was babyface material
yeah.
for that generation. and that connection he had with all of us, I think, there's no denying. I mean, the one caveat is the 2001 stuff, like the match of Angle is the perfect example, because that was such an amazingly intense, pure heel performance. But no one remembers that for Steve Austin. He was completely cast in the wrong role. He should have been a babyface because of the overwhelming love everyone had for him.
Yeah.
As a pure performance, that was fantastic. But I mean, even in his early career, when he's doing these kind of wackier stuff and he's finding himself as a heel, even then it's turning face. But people talk about the Blondes because they remember him in reverence as stuff they enjoyed. So even from then. So I think you just disregard that, and then obviously the babyface stuff stands on its own. So it's a no-brainer for me, babyface all day, every day.
Every single moment just during that period of 98, 99, comes back in 2000. The guy was just the hottest thing ever in wrestling. It's as simple as that. And you kind of mentioned the 2001 stuff. We've talked about the heel turn being a mass misjudgment because of the fact that he was a babyface, and he couldn't go back from that, no matter how much he thought he could. And I think he could. I don't think it was from an aspect of, like, it wasn't that he didn't have it in him. He absolutely did, as some of the performances during the Alliance angle stated, that he definitely had the character and the wrestling style to go back to being it. It's just the audience wasn't going to accept it.
If I may interject here very briefly, we go back to you, it's kind of the flip reverse of what we talked about in the previous Better Faces or Heel show about the Ric Flair and Mick Foley types, where they became these legendary baby faces, largely off the back of how complete they were as heels, that people could respect and revere them, and that kind of played into why they were so loved and revered as baby faces. This is the flip reverse of, you had all this stuff that built up as a baby face, you tried to make him a heel by taking everything away, and the results were, you got nothing. You got nothing of what you had before.
So it's hard to kind of, argue against it. But here goes. I prefer him as a heel, quite frankly, and the reason why, and I've stated this before, we can easily go back into Dangerous Alliance, the Hollywood Blondes, the Dragon Slayer, any kind of time period, even if you want to douse in the one or two fleeting moments he had in ECW as Superstar Steve Austin, and some of the little promos he would do there. The guy was a great heel. He preferred to be a heel. He seems to have a lot more of a natural flair for being a heel, mainly due to what we would deem as being a classic babyface and a classic heel. He's definitely better as a classic heel. And this is probably, I guess, I'm going to probably help with the argument with these guys in terms of what makes him great face, because he wasn't the stereotypical babyface. That's the thing. He wasn't a Hogan. He wasn't a Warrior. He wasn't a Savage when he was babyface. Bret, Shawn, whatever. He was something completely different. And the reason why was because he was a heel. He was a heel that everybody cheered. I stated this before when I first saw him, because I was brought up on that type of wrestling of just baby faces are cool guys, all kind of honest and so on, and the heels are the assholes. I was confused when watching Austin for the first time after a gap away of seeing this dick being cheered so well. And it's just like, it took a while for me to disassociate how the wrestling industry had evolved since I last saw it. I couldn't buy into him as a babyface character because he was such an asshole. It took me a while to kind of realize that wrestling has changed now, and that's what made Austin so special as a babyface, was because he was completely different, and he was tapping into the whole people who hate their boss, and yada yada yada, and people who want to hit their boss, and so I kind of get that aspect of it. But it took me a long time to. His key period for me, which is just the whole Bret Hart feud and a little bit beyond that, where he was just ruthless. He was in full heel mode. He was in full fucking badass, and that's when I got it. And it was when it was like Survivor Series 96. He comes out, and I'm like, right, I get it now. I get why they cheered him. It wasn't because he was a natural babyface. They cheered him because he was such a great heel. Everything was evolving. Hogan had turned heel the previous year, and it's that thing of like the typical Hogan babyface wasn't working anymore. Because the icons of the 80s weren't cool anymore, and they're looking for something else.
I didn't have the same view, obviously, at the time. Watching it at the time, I can understand there's a bit of a divorce issue there, because obviously you didn't see that as it came along. But for me, he was just so fucking. He had such an incredible motor on him as a heel the entire time. And he was such a fierce bumper, whether he was a face or heel. And you can just, the thing is for me, that entire block until he becomes a babyface is 6-7 years of him trying to find what he is as a wrestler, not just as a heel, But just as a wrestler, he's trying to be a cocky, flairish heel at first, doesn't get it. He's in the Dangerous Alliance, he's very good mechanically, but he's still not top guy level. He gets with Pillman in the Blondes, and he tries to show a little bit more charisma as a cocky heel, and he's getting there, but again, it's very likeable. The stuff with Dragon after that, and then flounders in WCW, flounders in the WWF at first, finally finds himself, gets a feud with Brett, and when he finally finds himself and he finds the pure form of what he's supposed to be, the whole world looks at him and says, that's the guy that we all love right now, because that's what society is. I think it's got that much to do with the boss, because they were cheering him before he stunned Vince. It's just the fact that this is a fucking cool, hard motherfucker who takes no shit, he's charismatic as fuck, and who doesn't love that guy?
I mean, he was much more likeable as well, as we said before. Brett and Shawn, who were these kind of ambiguous, they were okay, at times they were fakes, at times they were heels, but they were pussies, they were annoying. This guy just comes along, he's kicking ass, he's a badass.
And he's got charm. He's got
exactly,
charm,
it's the charm as well.
He's got that wry smile that he can bust out every now and then where everyone's smiling along with him, even though but he doesn't rub it in anybody's face. He's not sycophantic ever. Moving on now to the next one, and this is one, Kieran, that you suggested, so I want to get your thoughts on this first. Brock Lesnar, because to me, again, this is one of the least tough ones on the board, in the sense that I think that Brock Lesnar is one of the absolute greatest monster heels to ever grace a wrestling ring. So I'm curious as to where the argument for face comes, because for me, he's heel all day long.
Oh, he's heel all day long for me too. And he was my favourite big man on the Big Man Show. Yeah. Which, what episode was that?
Number 4.
Episode 4, there you go. Go back to the archives, folks.
Yeah.
And it's not just him, his persona, his work. Obviously, it comes with a package with Paul Heyman, and Heyman is also much better in the heel role, in my opinion. But the question, when we were just thinking about guys, arose for me that, almost similar to the Austin thing, he's such a great ass-kicking badass that you want to cheer for him to kill guys who are pussies or unlikable faces. So there's always a natural inclination to see him in a babyface light. It was happened in, was it 2002? You know, I love the guy. I didn't necessarily want to see him turn, but I loved his work. You know, he was fantastic. Same now, he's like, he's the ass kicker, he's the beast. There's a likeable edge to him, so given that is the natural inclination. I mean, I fully go heel if I was, as I said, one of my criteria, if I'm booking a company, and how do I want to use a guy, he's a heel all day for me. He is your lead monster heel. But as we said, that natural inclination, when a guy is so good at being a heel, he inevitably turns face. So in that context, I just thought it was an interesting question to pose, really.
Yeah, because it does tie into that thing of,
and also, sorry, and the money side of him as well. Is there more money as a face?
That's exactly what I was about to say next. It was exactly what I was going to say. Is this like Austin, where the big money is going to be Brock as the super fight babyface? But I think they've always kind of had that thought, because that's kind of why they flipped him so quick in 2002, because the crowd's getting behind him. Because how can you not cheer the guy that's going to throw the Big Show around, beat the Rock clean, and kill the Undertaker in Hell in a Cell, clean as a sheet? It's pretty damn tough. They did a decent job and they heated him up. You know, again, reheated him, because they kind of fumbled with him a little bit when he first came in. But just that first match back with John Cena, which was absolutely incredible match, if he'd been away for so long. Mm. And he comes back and has one of the best matches in years. I find it very tough to kind of... I think this is the thing. Better face or heel, if you're actually looking at the merits of what he's done so far in both roles, I think he obviously wins easily, like you said. The potential for him as a babyface is really quite interesting.
I think he's so subtly good as well. Like, you know, we've said his ability to sell at the right moments, take a pratfall and a bump when he's a heel.
Yeah,
he's just, it's, you know, it's just a tougher sell as a face, but he's got the fire and the comeback as a face. So I think it's a question that the more you think about it, I think it becomes, on the surface, it's an easy one, I think, for most people. But when you think about it more, and it's, as you say, the potential of where you go with this guy, I think it poses an interesting question, really.
Yeah, I think it is definitely a tricky one. I had to kind of go back and forth over it, because, and I guess the benefit is because essentially his wrestling career is so short, you can actually really kind of narrow it down to just a few points. Because when you're looking at the heel side, you know, you're looking at his, when he first comes in, pretty much then in 2002, when he's heel again in summer of 2003, up until him leaving, and then obviously him initially coming back and his run through of just, you know, Cena, Triple H, CM Punk, Big Show, Undertaker, and so forth, while his babyface runs are just limited to his WrestleMania 19 stuff around that time, and just very recently, you know, obviously his heel work completely overshadows his babyface work. If I had to watch him, what I want to see him be a heel solely by the fact I want to see him dominate the match. That's
the
reason why.
But he just has a face anyway.
Yeah.
Quickly to a point I was going to say next was, I think longevity, it's as a heel, because as a face, it's hard to get credible long-term heat on him over and over again, which obviously in his current role isn't a concern, which why in his current role as a babyface is perfect. But yeah, that's just, I think, something as well, that in if he was on a full roster, if he was a full-time guy, I think there's more longevity as a heel, even though the money might be as a face. That's open to debate, simply because how the nature of his character.
It's that issue of the sort of the 20-minute match, if you like, isn't it? And it's that perception. When you picture the match in your mind's eye and you think, it just doesn't seem credible. Doesn't seem credible that you can get long, sustained heat on him at any point. Especially when you consider there's no heels anywhere near the active roster that are his size that you can genuinely believe can physically match him.
And then the flip side, as a heel, when he then does sell believably for a punk, it makes the babyface. So, for me, heel.
Yeah, I mean, that hence why his first babyface run only lasted really a few months before they decided to turn him heel again and swap the Lesnar angle dynamics around. I'd definitely be more into watching a dominant babyface Lesnar than say like a dominant John Cena kind of S character, not to just use him and bully him, but like just any other Hogan if you want, whatever. I don't care where he's babyface or heel, I just want him to come in the ring.
That's great for this show.
I just want him to come in the ring, kick everybody's ass, nobody get anything in on him, and then he leaves, and I will pay good money every single time, and I won't get bored.
This is exactly the question I posed. Does that inherently make him a babyface?
Because you want to see him succeed. Yeah.
That's the thing, because I love him, because again, this is the thing of me loving heels. I love him so much as
Austin,
I love him so much as a heel, because just how awesome he is. I mean, I still got a soft spot for his first run, when he was when he was the next big thing. I still got a soft spot for that run. But obviously, in terms of like his recent stuff, the guy is by a country mile the best thing that WWE has. There's nothing that touches it. But he's obviously, as a draw, I think he'll be better as a babyface.
I think they absolutely fucked it with Lesnar on this last run, in the sense of, obviously, they fucked it at first. But even on this last one, they reheated him up with the Taker streak, and he was red hot as a heel. He was so hot as a heel. And the original plan was to do the murder job on Cena that he did on Daniel Bryan and end his title reign that way. And that obviously would have just fanned the flames even more of people fucking hating the fact that Brock Lesnar's getting this treatment. And killing... He ended the streak and he fucking murdered Daniel Bryan, our guy. Goddamn, anybody but this guy, then here comes Roman Reigns, was the plan. The fact that they had to do it to Cena instead... Everybody loved the fact that he absolutely killed Cena and gave him the beating that every, Cena sucks chanter
wishes they could give it
and wanted him to take for years. So it completely lost that element of Brock as the pure heel that you had for 6 months there in a row. And they just kind of, and now they're kind of in this kind of difficult middle ground where you've got to put him as the baby face because people are going to cheer him because they know he's awesome. But again, like, you gotta get heat on him, and you got situations like where you stick him with Taker, where half the crowd boos because they like the other guy too. It's a really difficult line to walk.
When you think of sort of a heel turn or a face turn being sort of really on the nose and really sort of statement of fact, that didn't really happen with Lesnar, in truth, did it?
No.
You know, obviously he was babyfaced by default with the match at Mania with Reigns. And again, he's sort of babyface by default because it's whiny, snivelling Seth Rollins. He hasn't done anything to be a babyface.
No.
Well, F5 Michael Cole, perhaps. Okay, there's maybe that. But, but you know, in the grand scheme of things, he hasn't had that sort of that babyface act, if you like. To pick up on Kieran's point here and what he's talked about, sort of people's general inclination towards Brock, when he initially came back, again, going by the reactions, you only have to look at when his music would kick in and you'd get that instant sort of reaction from the crowd. And it's not sort of the blood-curdling, if you like, you know, fist-pumped screaming at the top of your lungs. It's like, oh, yes, it's Brock! You know, and there's that natural interest and the sort of natural just enjoyment they automatically get out of the sense of, oh, it's Brock, someone's going to die. Someone's going to die or we're going to be treated to a great Heyman promo.
Yeah.
So there's not that... There's just, to me, there was never that sort of instant... Oh, shit, no. No, oh, God, no, it's Lesnar. He's going to kill Brian or something to that effect. It was always an instant sort of enjoyment at the prospect of what Lesnar was going to come out and do. So it's a strange one in that regard. I mean, trying to look at his run as a whole up to now, if you throw in 2002 onwards, that initial babyface run just did not work.
Smiling
at all. For all the reasons that Kieran mentioned about the way to get sustained heat on him not being believable, and the way that he's, you know, he became smiling babyface Brock Lesnar drinking milk with Kurt Angle.
Mm.
Whereas, you know, it was much more... when I say enjoyable, I don't mean in the sense of I really enjoyed it, but it was much more interesting to watch this notion of here's Lesnar beating Hogan with a bear hug and smearing the blood across his chest.
You know, and then sending the photos to The Rock.
Exactly,
awesome,
exactly. Man. Completely just blazing past The Rock and not even acknowledging him in the build-up and all that sort of thing. And it was all just... That was far more interesting to me. And Lesnar as a heel, I always find just far more... I think interesting is the best word I can think of to use, because there is this sort of disconnect when you try to have him as the babyface and get the heat, and you sit there and you just... You can't, to me, I can't really invest myself in it.
Well, it's difficult because I think there's that thing, and they're going to, if he was full time, they'd have to book him like Goldberg, and that the fact that he's not there all the time allows them not to. So I think it's kind of a bit of a blessing in disguise in some regards, because they don't get the chance to fuck that up.
the benefit of not being on TV these days.
Absolutely. Getting to your feedback now, Noid from TPWW says he's the big boss, the dragon at the castle. It's a testament to his ability that he was able to play a babyface at all in late 2002 and 2003, and even now is an ass kicking monster. If there were a true babyface on the rise in WWE, Brock Lesnar would make the perfect heel opponent for them at WrestleMania, though, and that speaks loudly about his worth as the top heel, even now he's the top babyface. The Gimmick Killer from WrestlingForum.com says, I couldn't buy Lesnar as a face. He's aggressive, angry, and mostly silent. Awesome as a heel, not so much as a babyface. Lockjaw from TPWW says, before his current face run, I'd say heel easily, but his current run as the Unstoppable Beast as a face is pretty immense. Been 20 plus years since we've had a face that looked so strong, so that's pretty special. In fact, all of his face runs have seemed more special than his heel runs. His heel runs were good stuff, but we've seen the monster heel before. The monster face is far more rare. A simple fan from TPWW says, heel, wasn't a big fan of his early face run when Paul flipped to the Big Show. Today he has the opportunity to be a badass face that can draw better than anyone on the roster. Phoenix20191 from FOW says, Brock's original heel run was amazing to rewatch. In a span of 24 hours, he beat both Hardy Boys via ref stoppage after triple powerbombing them. Project Humanoid from FOW says, heel, he's the ultimate monster. Wrestlers are at their best when they're playing extensions of their natural personalities, and Brock Lesnar is a hulking misanthrope who just wants to be left alone and kill things, inside the ring and out. Jap Jesus from FOW says, in a perfect world where we have baby faces the crowd wants to get behind, then Brock is a better heel. In 2015, he's the only guy with balls on the roster, so he's been a better babyface. And Emprise from Pro Wrestling Only says, heel to face Lesnar in 2002 was perfectly booked as a monster who let his actions speak louder than anything. Heel Lesnar in 03 was an utter bore. However, heel Lesnar in 2012 and so on has been a fun watch. The Cena Extreme Rules match continues to be one of my go-to matches when I just want to watch two guys beat the crap out of each other. Plus, add in the CM Punk match, along with the Cena, Rollins, Reigns, and Taker matches he's had since then, and Brock has been on a tear over the last 2 years. He is just a monster heel that everyone has been forced to respect, with dire consequences otherwise.
Just one question then. If we're still assuming then that he is still a babyface then, that he survived the recent Undertaker matches, still being the primary babyface in the company.
Oh, absolutely. I would argue he would have been a complete babyface against anyone on the roster other than Undertaker.
So in which case, if he's better off as a heel, what turns him back heel then?
I don't think you have to think about that right now.
Probably the flip side of what they did to turn him... He signed his contract because he loves WWE. He says, fuck you guys, I'm only here for the money. Cheer me, great, but buy my t-shirts more important. You can do it. But you do need a face opposite him, so that's the tough part.
That's the tough part. You can do that kind of stuff all you want, but there's no meat to it if there's no one to go against.
That's what I'm thinking. He might actually be a babyface for quite a while.
Oh, well, he's going to be.
Absolutely. I would argue don't tinker with it. Don't muddy the waters. You can't afford to do it because the babyface side is so weak.
Moving on now to the last one on the list. Again, similar in terms of that face heel murkiness we're going to get to here now. Eddie Guerrero. Seth82 from TPWW Forum says, Eddie was great at both sides. However, I will say he's a better heel. His stuff with Art Barr alone was just amazing. Those two were freaking heat magnets in Mexico. One of the most hated tag teams in Lucha Libre history. Also, his heel work in WCW was fun to watch too. Yeah, Baby from Wrestling Forum says, heel. Mostly because his offense was so amazing and crisp, he got heat so well with it, and he was great at playing the crowd. I'm thinking most courtesy of his ongoing Ray Jr. feud. He looked like he was breaking his back half the time. Gorgeous Dale Newstead from TPWW says babyface, but great at both. As a face, he was just so easy to get behind. He wrestled his matches with raw emotion and fire, and it seemed to come so natural to him. He was an incredibly believable babyface, and his work reminds me a lot of Ricky Steamboat, at least the feeling he gives you in his matches. You couple the aforementioned fire with top-rate selling and athleticism, and you have an ultimate babyface. Michael3165 from the UK fan forum says, I really loved Eddie as a good guy. The scheming, cheating underdog who went for and won the biggest prize in the industry. Again, he was cheating, but wasn't a bad guy. Everything he did made the fans love him more. I didn't buy into his heel character in WCW in the early WWF run. The more human he became, less scowling, more smiling, and the more humor he interjected into his act, the better he was. Andrew PCW from the F4W board says, Eddie was a great heel, but damn it, no one made you want to see him win more than he did as a babyface. And half the time, he was a vile cheater, and you still wanted to see him win. He was amazing. The Rabid Wolverine from WrestlingForum.com says, so hard to choose. He was equally great at both. Gun to my head, I'm gonna say heel, just because his 97 and 05 heel characters were two of my top 5 or 6 heel acts of all time. And he had far more classic matches as a heel than as a babyface, especially when he was pitted against his arch-nemesis, Rey Mysterio. Slasher from Pro Wrestling Only says, the answer is the same for all of them for me, and that's heel. It's just that those guys clearly had more fun with their characters when they got to be just heels. And for guys like Austin and Eddie, their babyface characters are essentially heels by moral definition anyways. One instance where being a heel almost felt like a waste to me was Eddie in 2005. He was still producing good storylines, mind you, but I think his failed title run and heel turn kind of felt like people were disappointed they didn't have much of an opportunity to be given permission to love and cheer for him. And it did seem like he was about to rediscover that spark in the fall of 2005 when he was the crafty heel play-acting as Batista's buddy. It was definitely something where he was headed back to becoming a top-level babyface, but then he dropped dead. Project Humanoid from F4W says, great as a heel too, especially in Los Gringos Locos and some of his work in WCW, but if his body could have held out, Eddie Guerrero was poised to be a generational star, provided WWE handed him right. Which is doubtful. As a hero of Mexican Americans and Mexicans as well, he had the potential to be the biggest ethnic babyface since Bruno Sammartino. His ratings drawing power among the Hispanic audience on SmackDown was unmatched, and there's a reason why WWE had been trying so hard for so long to replicate it, though none of the attempts have measured up. An air raid from the UK fan forum sums it up here and says, I'm sure plenty would disagree, but I preferred Eddie as the antagonist, whether straight up piece of shit trying to steal Ray's mask, or cat and mouse irritant in a more comedic style. His first couple of months in the Radicals were a joy, even with his arm in a sling at No Way Out, he's a heat machine, and he gives a masterclass at WrestleMania 2000 in making the audience want to see China, of all people, murder him. Later in the much maligned Dominic storyline, he displaced hitherto unforeseen ability to pull off really fucking sinister, and I was really enjoying his last pseudo babyface run, where we all know that Big Dave couldn't really trust him, sadly curtailed by his untimely death. I was prepared to cheer for him, but only in the smarkish, cheer the great wrestler manner, or because I thought the bloke behind the character deserved his success. In terms of actual performances, I thought he made a better heel personally.
This was the one I struggled with. Everyone else was pretty kind of like, you know, close, but I had a definitive favorite. This was the one that when I looked at it, I was like, shit, because he's exceptional at both. If you look at his babyface runs, I mean, yeah, he had little bits here and there in WCW when he first came in, and also as part of the Filthy Animals. The main stuff you're gonna look at is his WWF stuff in terms of babyface. The little bit when he was Latino Heat with Mamacita getting hugely over with the European belt or the IC belt at the time, and then obviously the lie, cheat and steal stuff, and Eddie was just superb at that, of just getting the crowd really into it, into that kind of gimmick. And again, it's that kind of like with the Austins or Brocks or whatever, it's like it's someone who morally, and that's they got the term right there, the one writer, morally they're corrupt, but you love it because they are, in a way. There's something endearing, and that's what Eddie had that way more in abundance, because he would just literally, he would grab a chair, throw the chair to the opponent, and then just instantly just like fall on the floor, and then he just slowly raise his head just to see if everything's, you know, going according to plan, with the little cheeky little smile. Like, he was able to portray how much he was enjoying doing what he was doing through his character as well, which kind of made you love him even more. But on the flip side, with the heel, it's fucking Eddie Guerrero. Mullet. Mullet Eddie Guerrero. Fucking Tash. Just, you know, WCW, just walking out. Chiseled physique. Just walking to the ring. Bad attitude. Just trying to literally break Ray in half. And there were times when I thought he almost did. with like the velocity in which he hits his moves. That's the thing. That's like, you know, like he just looks like he's trying to kill his opponent, and that's just how great he was. And just you know, the Radicals, him coming back in 2002, and just like again the initial like the Los Guerrero stuff with the little skits and Angel Papi or whatever. He was really tricky. He was really great at both. Because you loved him, but you also enjoyed him being a douchey, evil, greasy-looking freaking heel. Where you're just like, I don't want to be near this guy. But then the next moment, he'll turn babyface and you want to hug him. You know, it's just, I don't know. From in-ring work, I'd say heel. Because I always wanted to see him in charge of the match because he was just so superb. But I just loved him too much. So, yeah, tricky.
He is a tricky one. And I think the reason I've been prefacing a number of these choices with how would you look to use them on your own card is really synonymous with Eddie.
Is it because that's the deal breaker with Eddie?
Yeah,
for you?
Because I think as a heel, I think in ring he's probably better as a heel. His history of matches is better as a heel, but he couldn't be a main event of that size as a heel. Whereas the beloved Eddie, that maybe because of his history and just that, you know, that connection he had with all of us, and his size as a main event babyface works, and on top of that, the history of being a ratings draw, even when he was a heel, kind of added this thing that maybe the long term is to monetize him is as a babyface. So it is an absolute super tough one, but I think if you're looking to maximize guys, I mean, with the heel stuff, his best stuff obviously was with Ray, but Ray's like the only guy on the card who's small than him, and he's a bully too.
Yeah.
Although he didn't have his better matches as he got older when he was real famous as a face, I'm going to go face because I think that overall, for me, just that, again, it's so rare to get a guy who connects on a certain level with the audience. And as great as his heel stuff was, I think when you've got something that special, that connection that's so rare, I think it's silly to really just be selfish and say, yeah, but I like your work as a heel.
Yeah.
So for that, I'd go, on that premise, I'd go babyface.
It's difficult, particularly in later years, because part of what was wrapped up in the sort of the babyface term, once you've got past sort of the lie, cheat and steal phase, when you get to the first title win, and they make a real point of hammering home sort of the hardships and the difficulties, you know, much of which has been self-inflicted. When you tie all that in and you create the redemption story for him to win the world title, I think you can never disassociate that from the, even, you know, as sinister as the character wants to be with Dominic and all that entails, you can never really disassociate everything that you know beforehand about him outside of the ring and everything that he and the family went through. So the heel turn after the world title win never clicked. I don't think it never worked. People still wanted to cheer him regardless of what he did. That's why you were able to sell "I'm Your Pappy" t-shirts.
Yeah,
and to Kieran's point about the sort of the monetization element of it all, even with the Radicals, you know, Mamacita, you're selling Latino Heat t-shirts.
Yeah,
you're selling the Lie, Cheat and Steal t-shirts. In WCW, it's the Cheat to Win t-shirts. There is this sense of a connection with the audience that is hard to manufacture. It just comes organically. It just happens naturally. And I'll agree with you folks around the table in the sense of, you look at, you know, a match collection, great match. I don't want to just rattle off a list sort of thing.
New Japan AAA, all over the place.
All those sorts of things. Yeah, we all know his body of work. And we can all go, you know, on a match catalogue, and I'd say heel. But you just can't escape that connection. And as much as he was trying to be a heel at times, and as sinister as he was trying to be, fans still just naturally gravitated to him. And I think when you've got that sort of natural element, I think the babyface side of it just fits for me. It just seems to work.
Yeah, it's that feud with Mysterio, it just felt wrong. It's like, I don't want to boo this guy. At this point, I don't want to not like Eddie Guerrero. But it's funny, because like you said, that was always there. We talked in the Monday Night War timeline, the very first one we ever did, where WCW did a survey of like a bunch of different audiences of who was, you know, who had certain qualities, and the most likable wrestler on the roster, more than Hogan, Sting, Savage, all of them, the one everybody liked the most was Eddie Guerrero in the survey they did. There's always just this charm about Eddie Guerrero, where as good as he is, as that just despicable, slimy, cowardly heel, diabolical, despicable, and cowardly, you're drawn to him. He's got a magic about him.
Take a WCW example, where he's had the wallet stolen, and he's getting the luchadors to all unmask backstage. You know, a real dickish thing to do when you know the Mexican culture and the luchador culture. But Eddie's reactions are just fantastic, and when the one takes his mask off and he recognises him and they're hugging, and you know, he's a prick, but you love him. you love me because that comedic timing just, you know, naturally he ingratiates himself to you. The only time I can think of really where he was sort of genuine out and out heel and you weren't necessarily drawn in by him in that sort of positive sense, if you like, was with Art Barr as Los Gringos Locos. And I think that's mainly because at the time of seeing that, we don't know his backstory. We don't know the hardships he later goes through.
No, and two, he's not the leader of the team. Yeah. Art Barr is, and Art Barr at the time comes off far more charismatic than Guerrero does, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. The Guerrero's obviously still growing into himself as a heel, and I mean, and he's still great. Don't get me wrong, but he is the second banana in terms of the heat getter.
He's the supporting cast member, yeah.
Would you say, you said about Austin, it was a really good point about how even when he was a heel, he was finding himself. Would you say Eddie is similar in a way that charm was always there as the heel, but it wasn't until they put it together in like the cheating babyface role that kind of hit home the strong points and the likability of him as well. So that was the finding of his character.
It summed up everything about him in one complete package, and there's no way that you can take that package and boo it.
It was that thing of like, you know, because I was a big fan of his WCW stuff, in which he was primarily a heel for that. But I remember when I first saw the Los Guerreros promos that they started to run with this new gimmick that they're going with, and I remember the specific one. It's him and Chavo walking down the street in the suburbs, right, which are trying to make it look like, well, this is a bit weird, you know, two Mexicans in the suburbs. And then like it's just like this woman walks by with a pram, and it's the thing where like they're looking at the baby, and they're doing like all the kitchy kitchy like that, and the camera is like looking from the view of the baby at them, and just looking at these two guys, just Eddie Guerrero's face, just like just staring down at this baby. The mother walks away with the baby, and they show all the stuff they just stole off the pram and off the woman's possessions and stuff, and they're just comparing who got the best loot. And I was just like, this is borderline racist. Right?
Paul Heyman hated those vignettes, by the way.
Yeah,
he absolutely hated. He said that this is too racist. Really.
Yeah, it is racist. It's very badly stereotyping, but Eddie's kind of making this work because it's like Eddie's charm. And so I was like, man, this might work for him at least.
Yeah, it's funny because I was talking to you, Kieran, about this, but Air Raid from the UK Fan Forum sent an email to our email account a while back and just mentioned how he was at the show at the Birmingham NEC that we were at, the SmackDown show, the SmackDown house show, when Eddie opened up against Rhino, and he's the first babyface that comes out on the show, and the place went more ballistic for Eddie than almost anybody else, at least as far as my recollection goes, as anybody else on the show. And Raid mentioned to me, he said to his friend, man, he's so over, and if they put the belt on him, which is funny because it's the exact same thing that me and a couple of friends were saying at the same time elsewhere in the building, like, man, he's like top guy over.
You know, you were telling about, like, in terms of like the likability factor, you know, the fact that anytime someone does a frog splash or the Three Amigos, whatever, they still chant Eddie's name. I mean, if somebody hits a neck breaker, they're not chanting Rick Rude's name or anything like that. You know, they don't chant other people's names. There's only like a handful of deceased wrestlers whose names get chanted when they do a move. It's like, it's just still that emotional connection. They want to chant for Eddie because he's still missed.
With that said, we've stretched the gamut of the six guys we're here to talk about today. Thank you very much for your contributions. They were very much appreciated. This has been a really fun look at face and heel dynamic in six pretty fantastic talents, as a matter of fact. So thank you very much for listening. Just again, a little bit of housekeeping. SquaredCircleGazette.com, you can go and check the archives. Facebook.com/SCGRadio, you can like us on there and never miss an update. And for next week's show, of course, we will be back. We're doing the third of our fantasy booking series. We've tried to save WCW in October 99. We tried to fix the brand extension in April of 2002. Next week, we're taking on possibly the most horrific challenge yet, which is we are going to try and fix the WWF in 1995. We're going from January 95, we've got the whole year to try and make a go of what is unanimously, around this table, the rankest year in the history of the company.
You could say it's a man mountain to climb.
Burn it to the ground. Or hire Vince Russo. Same thing.
Yeah. So with that said, I want to thank everybody again. Thank you for all the contributions. For G. John Chase.
Is that your face or did he neck throw up?
For Carl Jones.
Remember, folks, I was sober this week. Next week it's drunk. Hit me up at oldmanjones85. Let me know which was best.
And for the birthday boy, Kieran O'Rourke.
At Wrestling Prophet, because a month before Jesus, there was me.
I'm Liam O'Rourke and we're out of here.
Just let your soul glow.
Hulk maniac. I can sure tell you how to stay on track. You gotta train, say your prayers, eat your vitamins too. These are all the things that the maniacs do. Positive thoughts and positive deeds. These are the things that make success. Family and friends, they're the only